Hello, friends. I'm recording because I think I have too many random little things to say. And one of them is just complexity, you know? Complexity. It's a complex thing, and it just happens. It creeps up, and it just happens. And being a framework maintainer is a life of just dealing with complexity and balancing complexity and whatever. I think, I mean, all development is, but when you're building stuff, it's a little different than when you're maintaining stuff. When I'm in maintenance mode, man, it's just complicated. But okay, enough whining about complexity and complications. Let me give you like a little taste of like, I mean, I won't even, okay, specifically, today, I am working on this small little bug that I thought was pretty benign. And it is, I think it is, but it's, I guess I thought there would be a simple fix path, but then of course, like kind of often you go down the path and then you're surprised and you go, oh, wait a second. I didn't understand JavaScript the way I thought I did. That happens to me a lot, frankly. I don't know. I think I told you guys about that vulnerability in LiveWire. The fun story where there was a vulnerability because I used like let data equal empty object literal. And that was literally a vulnerability, which is pretty wild. But anyway, so I'm working on a wire navigate bug. So the bug is if you visit a page with wire navigate, so let's say you click on a link and there's a hashtag at the end. You click on that link, there's a hashtag in it because you want it to, you know, I mean, often that's what you want, a hashtag in there so that it'll scroll down to the hash. So right now in LiveWire, if you do that with Wire Navigate, if you click on one of those links, the hashtag disappears. All right, that's a bug. Now, I thought, okay, this is probably a simple thing. In the code base, where I do the replacing of the URL after I fetch a new page in Wire Navigate, when I do that, and if you're not familiar with Wire Navigate, maybe you're familiar with TurboLinks or TurboDrive or Swup or even client-side routers from React and Vue and whatever. It's all kind of the same thing. You're hijacking a normal link navigation. You're doing your own virtual navigation or synthetic navigation or whatever, and then you're changing the URL manually so that the page never truly reloads. It just appears like it does functionally, but it's much faster. So, but you know that. So Wire Navigate, by the way, I've been avoiding Wire Navigate for years, SPA mode. You know, I like did a proof of concept years ago, and then I just decided, nope, this is the kind of thing that's going to very much cost me a lot of time. But eventually, you know, it gets worth it where it's like you've solved all the other problems or the bigger problems. This is the next big thing. And so we did it and I launched it and I knew that it would be a complicated, burdensome feature. And it is absolutely turning out to be for all of my suspicions, but also new ones that I couldn't even anticipate. So here's a very tiny one. So like I said, you click on a link and there's a hashtag in it. And then you go to that page and what shows up in the URL bar doesn't have the hashtag. So why is that? I thought, no problem. I take those strings. So like I have a little function called like extract destination from link. And you pass an element object in that is a link. I get the href attribute. I take that string and I create a URL object from it with a base URL of the current domain so that you always get like a predictable string. You're not sometimes getting just the URI, meaning everything after the domain name, and then sometimes getting the full URL. It's like you're getting a full URL object. Okay. So then when you go to make an actual fetch request to the server, you're passing in what I want to pass in is the URI, the stuff after the domain name. Okay. So I thought that, okay, I create this URI, this URL object that has the hash in it, but then when I convert that back into a string, I must be missing a little piece to add the hash back in. And that is true. So far, this is a simple fix. So I created a new function called, you know, extract URI string from URL object, you know, the opposite of create URL object from string. So I extract it. And it's very simple. It's like return, you know, URL dot, and it's like path concatenate on search string, and I wasn't concatenating on the hash string. So now I'm going to concatenate on the hash string. Now I get the full URI that I want back. Okay, great. So I'm thinking this morning, this is an easy fix. I chose this pull request to work on because I figured that it would be light, you know? But here's the problem. I found something surprising. So if you call fetch in JavaScript and you pass in a URI, and by the way, if you don't know the difference between URL and URI, you are forgiven, but here it is. Universal Resource Locator, and I believe Universal Resource Indicator. Universal Resource Locator, a URL, has an HTTP schema prefix or scheme prefix and a domain name, potentially a subdomain name, top level domains, whatever, and then your search part and then your hash part if those are on it. But yeah, so you have your domain, your path, which is like, these are all the things about URLs if you're not familiar. These are the words. There's the scheme, which is like HTTP or HTTPS. And then you have a subdomain if it's like livewire.laravel. Then you have the domain, which is like Laravel. And then you have the top level domain, which is the .com or the .dev or whatever. And then if you do /user/1, that whole bit, those slashes, that's the path. And then after that, if you have a question mark with like something equals something, that's called the search or the query string, but like on a URL object, it's called .search. And then if you have a hash at the very end pointing to like a specific ID on the page, that's called the hash. So those are all the parts of a URL. A URI, you know, and I don't actually know the formal definition of URI, but in my mind, it's everything after the domain name. A URI is the part that you can put inside of an A tag in between your app and not need the full URL. It's like everything relative to the current site you're on, the current subdomain, domain, top level domain, that, okay? So when that's just a fun little thing, a fun little refresher. If you're calling fetch in JavaScript, you can pass in a full URL, but you only need to pass in a URI because you're not like, unless you're fetching a resource from like a different domain name, whatever. We're just fetching something on the current domain name. So I just need the URI. I want everything after the domain name. Okay. So you pass that in and I'm going to pass in the path. I'm going to include the search string in case the backend needs to do something with that. And now I'm including the hash. Like I told you, bug fixed. I include the hash. Here's the problem. When you get the response back from the server, there's a response object in your dot then promise on your fetch. There's a response object and response.url is the full URL that was sent to the server, but there's no hash. Weird. So I talked to ChatGPT and ChatGPT tells me, yeah, hashes don't get sent to servers. I'm like, what? What? I guess it makes sense. They're like, yeah, hashes are just for front end. Servers don't care about hashes. They don't need to know anything about the hash. The hash is for the front end to like, you know, link to stuff, to like scroll to an ID, or you can even, you know, do wonky things like show a modal if a hash is in the URL. So yeah, it's pretty weird. That was pretty surprising. It's funny. Like these are kind of like simple things, but it's just a misunderstanding of how it all works. It's like, wait a second, a hash doesn't get sent to the server. So, all right, why is this a problem for this navigate situation? Why is this a problem for showing a hash in the URL after you navigate to one? So here's the thing. Okay, I thought, you know what? No problem. The URL that comes back from the server doesn't have a hash in it. Why don't I add it back into it? Before I submit the request, I can create a variable called hash. And then when I go to, you know, take the, and by the way, the reason that I need the URL from the response of the fetch is because there could have been redirects. That's the thing. This is the first bug that we encountered like a month ago. If you click a Wire Navigate link to a certain destination and that destination redirects server side, returns that location header or whatever, and does a redirect, I'm not reflecting the current URL for what the redirect is, you know? And that's not cool. You want to show the most, the final, I call it the variable in LiveWire is final destination. It's the final URL that has been visited, the last one that has been redirected to. So this is the problem. And these are the things that It's just hard to know. If you didn't write the code, if you don't maintain the thing, it's really hard for somebody making a pull request to actually like know these concerns. But that's okay. That's why I review them. So the problem is now, okay, if I take the hash, okay, the hash, the URL that comes back from the server is missing the hash. That's just the mechanics of the web. Bummer. No problem. I'll cache the hash. I'll put it in a variable, temporary variable, and I'll add it back to the end of the URL so that when I replace the URL in the browser's bar at the top, you'll see the hash in it, right? Wrong, because I just explained to you that you may have redirected, and you don't want that hash to be carried over. So maybe I have more complicated logic. That what I'm doing right now is verbally talking through the kind of write-ups that I do a lot. But maybe I have some client-side logic that says, if the path coming back from the server is different from the one that went to the server, then we know that there was a redirect in there. If there wasn't a redirect, add the hash back in. If there was, then don't. Maybe that's the solution. I'm kind of talking it through right now and figuring that's it. But, you know, how does it work with do browsers deal with this kind of thing? If you click a link in a browser to a new page that and you have a hash in that link, but then there's a redirect on the server to redirect to something else, you just see what was redirected to. And then if you hit the back button, the hash isn't going to be there because it never got persisted to the query string. It never got put in there. This is a question. If there's a hash, if you have a hash on a URL and that URL redirects to a different one, does that hash get carried over? These are questions I need to answer. I'm coming up with them as I go. Okay, I'm gonna pause right here. I'm gonna say that this is the complexity of my morning. It's not like crazy, but it's just deeper than I thought. You know, it's more than just a simple thing. It's like, oh, here's actually something that's surprising about the way the web works and kind of launches you into a whole thing. And when I get to this point, which I'm currently at now, I decided to record this episode because, I don't know, I felt like talking to somebody, which is very valuable, but I can also achieve the benefit of what I'm doing right now by writing out these essays that I keep talking about. I write them all the time. I wrote one this morning for a different pull request where it's just things are a little vague. I have some tiny hangup. I think the solution to something that somebody proposed is unideal. I think the problem statement's not clear. Whatever. Pretty much anything that's not trivial. I'm rolling up my sleeves. I'm pulling open an Obsidian document and I'm starting with the title, The Setup. And I'm describing the happy path, the way the scenario should work, the world we're living in. And then I do a next one called The Problem. And then inside the problem, it's like, okay, that's all supposed to be that way, but here's why it's not. Here's what's happening that's different, and here's the explanation of the problem. And sometimes there's sub-items, but that's pretty much it. And then the solutions. And I go one by one, and I propose solutions. And by the time I get to solutions, I've created a blog post. I've done the due diligence to make this a clear, readable document for anybody, not just my brain, with code snippets and everything. And so by the time that I've done all this, I've probably already solved it. But then I go to write out potential solutions and I start just coming up with stuff that I would have never come up with. And the answer is usually very clear. It is bizarre how powerful this freaking technique is. If I ever hire anybody, it's going to be mandatory. Every freaking thing you do, a feature, a pull request, a blog post, anything has one of these write-ups. You write one of these things up because it makes you a 10 times as good of a thinker when you do this. But you can achieve something like this by talking to people. The problem is that, there's pros and cons to talking to people. Ideally, you're doing both. Ideally, you're starting with a write-up and then you're talking it through with somebody. When you're talking it through with somebody, it's very fluid. Like right now, this is one side fluid. This is whatever you call that. This is, I can't think of the frickin', when you're writing, you are writing... when you're reading someone's, I can't think of the freaking word, whatever. This is very one-sided. It's very fluid, but it's very one-sided. So I'm getting the benefit of talking through what I just did, what I would do for a write-up. I described to you the scenario so that we're on the same page. Then I throw in, it's very much like a story arc, you know, that there's the setup, then there's like the conflict, and then there's the resolution. That's what it is. It's a story. These write-ups, they have a setup where we introduce the characters of the story and describe their life and everything is happy and there's no conflict yet. Then we introduce the main conflict of the story. And that is usually the bug you're trying to fix. And then you know, we explore the problem and then we walk down from Mount Problem to resolution in the solution. And that it's very interesting that I've just like kind of identifying that arc. I know that arc, I bet that story arc thing is like a holy concept, you know? Like I bet this is, it feels like one of those things like, you know, this is the fancy word for it, but the something dialectic, the thesis, the antithesis, and the synthesis, which we've talked about in here. This, I used to call it, before I discovered that this was already a philosophical concept. I've talked to you about this before, but when I was younger, I would see this pattern in things, and I called it the third layer. It's like, oh, this is the third layer. You know, you're like really into something, and then you like drop it, and then you don't care about it, and then you kind of return to it, but not as dedicated in a more balanced way. Like that's the third, and that concept just applies to everything. Turns out it's called the something dialectic, or maybe it's just called the dialectic. I don't know, but it's the thesis, the antithesis, and the synthesis. And this concept is so prevalent in life in so many ways. It's so true in that sense, and I feel similarly about story arcs, this sort of setup, conflict, and resolution. And maybe what it is a thesis, an antithesis, and a synthesis. So maybe there's some sort of, you know, parallels, some overlap here between those two concepts. But it feels like a holy concept. I think about it a lot. I think about, I was even thinking of, this is kind of out, we're going there, okay? This is kind of an out there thought, but I was watching something yesterday or 2 days ago. I don't know what it was, but maybe it was boring, maybe it wasn't. But here was the thought experiment in my head. I was like, okay, humans are, you dial into conflict. And that's why any show, no matter what, has to hit that button. You have to. Any movie, any TV show, everything, commercial, anything, has to have tension or conflict, whatever word you want to use. Because it creates, yeah, the conflict creates a tension. If everything is easy street from a story perspective, you don't care. When there's a conflict introduced, you feel tension and you seek a release to that tension. And that's what it's about. And that's what shows do. They create tension that you want relieved. So you are engaged for that relief. It's an enjoyable journey for the most part. The tension part is not always enjoyable. The relief part is absolutely enjoyable. And that's why you keep coming back. And the good shows leave you in a state of tension after every episode. So that when you go to the next one, so that you have that prompt to go to the next one, you're seeking that relief. Right? My dad always told me, Colonel Tom Parker, Elvis's manager, always said, always leave them wanting more. He always told me that when we would try to exhaust something, like if it was a fun game or whatever, he would tell us that. And what he was really telling me is once you exhaust this fun thing you're doing, or once you overplay to your audience, you know, once you squeeze everything, then they're done, you know, where if you hold off right at the end there, you know, you leave them with that desire, with that tension, they're going to come back, you know, and that's kind of the way to be. So this tension concept, stories, movies, whatever, I was thinking, this is the language of human engagement. So good education leverages this. The best educational material leverages this. For example, there's really, I think, the ultimate goal is hiding education. And you can see that the masters of this, The master of this is Mark Rober. Look, like, maybe, I don't know. I was watching his latest one with wheelchairs. He makes a really awesome wheelchair. And his episodes have gotten to the point where the actual part where he does the building and the engineering, and this may actually be a con, but I don't know. The actual part where he does the nuts and bolts engineering is reduced to like a 5-second montage. It's wild. This could be, in an alternate universe, this is his whole show, is building this thing. You know? But he just kind of like, it's for his entertainment, it's all about, and I mean, you see this with like, with Mr. Beast, you know, his formula for YouTube success, basically creating that tension right in the beginning, saying, we're going to drop a car on this person's face at the end. He makes a promise, then you want resolved, you know? And he does the job. He does. He fulfills that resolution, but he's always reminding you of why you're still here. He's giving you progress so you stay engaged, but he's also reminding. So this, yeah. Oh my gosh, it's so powerful. And so the thought experiment, the out there thought is thinking like, this is the language of engagement, this tension resolution. How can you embed education deeply in here so that it's even hidden? And you think about like how much you learn about a period of time from a period film or a show like Mad Men. You know, I have a mental framework for the time period of like 1969 to 1978. I understand, I know that the events that were like very close in time, you know, and I know what people looked like in that period of time and how a workplace operated, you know, and the values of a neighborhood and, you know, and it's not all 100% accurate, but I have some education about that time period. Same thing with like a war movie as opposed to a war documentary, you know? So I think that's just very cool. And I am in my mind, it's like the perfect way to teach someone is that they don't even realize that they're learning. But the problem is that the more in depth the problems are, the things you're trying to, more mechanical, the things you're trying to teach them, the harder it is to frosting it all with this sort of engagement, you know, juice. But anyway, all of that to say that these write-ups that I do, we went on a giant meandering journey, and I was conscious of that when I was doing it, and I didn't even apologize for it. And I'm not. This is not an apology. No, you're not going to get an apology from me. So yeah, this meandering journey, this the thesis, the antithesis, the synthesis, this is kind of the essence of these write-ups that I do. And I don't know if the story arc is actually relevant in any other way that it is. It is a story arc, but I don't think it's like necessarily beneficial for engagement. Maybe it is. It is that structure, you know? It absolutely is. Maybe I should call it words that call out to the story more, like maybe introduction, problem resolution, conflict resolution, maybe. I don't know. Could be fun. I can do whatever I want. I can just do something for fun. I might do that. So there you go. All that to say, I think talking through this, I figured out how to solve this problem. But this is my life. This is just one pull request. There's a lot of them. There's a lot of them. And it's hard to get other work done when you're thinking about this kind of stuff all day. You know? But we're pushing on. I'll see you.